You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. Our government cares about
they
you.
They ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me. With your life
running like a red disease,
I'm running like a red disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted. And we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must be done, and you will get it done, and you'll do it safely. And that's why we honor and respect you. We appreciate that. Today is a special program. My good brother, Dr. Umar Johnson, is going to be with us. I'm going to read some of the Inye Sesim, and then we'll get off into the program. But I'm going to make some announcements, too, prior to bringing on Brother Umar. And so I won't make the usual announcements that I do make. Brother Jay, if you're listening. So, the Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. August 10th. The heart of the wise man lies quiet like a limpid water. A Cameroonian proverb. There is no quietude for those caught up in aggression and arrogance, for those whose every thought leads to accusations and unfulfillable threats against those who cannot tolerate dissent from our way. There is no peace there, no solace, for it is instigators and perpetrators. They only trouble the water. Those who seek serenity embrace the stillness wisdom that brings. Wisdom calms because it knows the intense, endless futility brought by insatiable anger and frustration. This time and place is rife with a corruptive discourse. It breeds chaos. It swallows it in. The cultural ceiling of the owners of this empire is chaotic, as it is for the rest of their family. Their minds know nothing but chaos, and their souls cannibalistically feed on the energy it generates. Moreover, the society they have created replicates it in everyone contaminated by it. Those following in their diseased way do the same, often suppressing them in their malevolence. In these troubled times, having a heart that lies quiet like limpid water requires forethought and courage, many long contemplative years of it. For only the accumulation of a seasoned knowing and learning bring the wisdom which provides resilient bridges over troubled waters. Even then, though, the need will rise when aggression must be used against those who cannot fathom peace except through a violence and abuse against others. For warriors, the serenity of the untroubled, limpid conscience can only come at the expense of peace and quiet. Ma'at tells us that it is the warrior's duty to stop all affronts to the human spirit. And in the face of a determined evil, this will require an act of violence because evil knows no righteous season or no righteous reason. Affirm, my heart is limpid. Affirm, my heart is limpid. August 11th. does it take to make a warrior wake? If not the lynching of a man, if not the rape of a woman, if not the slaughter of children, what does it take? George Edward Tate. The vestiges of oppression do not imitate, disturb, or define warriors. If anything, they serve as exercises for refining the focus of their righteous wrath. They become guides for targeting actions, although what does it take is a valid, timely question that reveals the depth of our cowardice as a noisy people. It is one which should absolutely be unworthy of warriors. It is one which should be reserved for those lesser will, broken fortitude, and shorter sight. Warriors know what it takes and gives more than all that is required of them. The revelation of contradiction deeply embedded in this question speaks volumes to Urugu's arrogance and our vanquished expectations. Some of us remain surprised at the presence and strength of our warriors, when necessary attempting to dismiss it into a reactive failure. Clearly, they have forgotten what the working definition of warriorhood is: to return and maintain a whole divine human order where none exist. I repeat, to return and maintain a whole divine human order where none exist. Others, not us, cannot grasp why such searing and unforgiving fire remains burning within some of us. They mistakenly believe that they have successfully broken all of us of any constructive, instructive remembrance. Neither can they comprehend uncompromising intrepidity, which thrives within a dynamic, undying love for our people. Both severely underestimate the warrior within our warriors. Affirm, I am awake. Affirm, I am awake. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. Speaking of Baba Baruti, for announcements, before I get to my guest, Brother Umar Johnson. Tonight is his webinar in his course series taught by Baba Baruti every Wednesday night, starting tonight, Wednesday night from 7:30 to 9, centered. And that is going to be a webinar. And, of course, you contact, you go to PayPal or Cash App, put in information, centered course, and your name, and then your email address where they'll send you the link. And, of course, do not share it. That begins. It is $15 a course or $45 for the whole course. $45 for the whole course. No, excuse me, $10. I repeat, I apologize, $10 per class or $45 for the whole course. All right, centered. The other announcement I want to make is, of course, I stated my guest Friday will be Brother Bashir Muhammad Bata Akinyele. You've probably read his articles in Atlanta Black Star and Your Black World. He was on the trip with Ashwa Kwesi to Kemet when Baba Rinoko was coming in with his tour, and then he made his transition. So Brother Akinyele will be my guest on Friday, because Rinoko was going to be my guest on Friday. And so we'll talk about his tour, his trip with Ashwa Kwesi, and, of course, speaking of my friend and brother, Baba Rinoko Rashidi, and his transition. And then on Monday, my guest will be Mama Tamu Kinyama, who wrote a book, 1148 Lewis Street, A Long Journey. She was a member of the Republic of New Africa when they had the shootout, August 18th, 1971, 50 years ago, August 18th. So we're gonna. Although Renoko's birthday is the 16th, she's going to be on with me on the 16th. And then, of course, on the 18th, she's having a book signing at the Core, 2857 Main Street here in Atlanta. Actually, it's in East Point, suburb of Atlanta.
at the Core, 2857 Main Street, East Point, Georgia, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. She begins her conversation, her presentation at 5 p.m. So, all right, dear brothers and sisters. Good morning, Dr. Umar Johnson.
Good morning.
How are you doing, brother?
All is well. Peace and Pan-Africanism. Everything's great. Getting ready for my 4-City Garvey tour. Denver Friday, Louisville Saturday, Macon, Georgia Sunday. And, of course, the grand finale in Harlem, where the Honorable Marcus Garvey built the largest black movement in modern history, Harlem, New York. I'll be there on his birthday, Tuesday, August the 17th. So I'm looking forward to the 4 cities, the 4 stops, and, of course, celebrating the greatest black leader of the 20th century.
Ashe, I agree. I agree. He is the model. I mean, anybody who can amass, do what he did, he didn't have Facebook, MySpace, YoSpace, any of that. He had the black world. In fact, you know, a lot of our people didn't even have telephones, even though telephones were out. But that's not how we mostly communicated. Word of mouth and the Negro World newspaper. Yeah. So we want to always honor him. Always have respect and reverence for Marcus Garvey for what he has done. Give those cities again?
Yes, indeed. On Friday, I will be in Denver, Colorado, which will be my first stop there in about 6 years. So it's been quite a while, and we will be at 119 Park West Avenue from 3 until 9. Friday, August the 13th, Denver, Colorado, 119 Park West Avenue from 3 until 9, and I speak at 5. There will also be book releases. All 4 of these events will be the release of my new book, Black Parent Advocate, The Art of War for Dealing with America's Public and Charter Schools. It's a 550-page encyclopedia that teaches black parents how to respond effectively and successfully to the tactics of the psychoacademic Holocaust machine. And it also teaches them how to understand and interpret some of the more popular documents that they're likely to receive from the school, such as the psychological evaluation, such as the IEP, the behavior intervention plan, and such things like that. So it's a very good follow-up to the first book, Psychoacademic Holocaust, but it is an absolute must-have because it teaches parents how to respond. Most of my work in serving our parents is centered around helping them respond. What do I say when the school wants to evaluate my child for a reading disability? What do I say when the school wants my child evaluated for ADHD? What do I do when they want to put him on meds or tell me he can't come back to school without medication? So this is the how-to book. This is the, you know, the answers to the questions that parents have dealing with each specific issue that arises in the school system. I brainstormed about 100 issues, and that's what I included in the book. So all 4 cities will see the release of that book. And so again, Denver, Friday the 13th, 3 to 9, Dr. Umar speaks at 5. Louisville, Kentucky, the next day on Saturday, August the 14th, which is my late cousin Shanika's birthday. Rest in paradise to her. But on the 14th of August, we'll be in Louisville at the Kentucky Center for African American Heritage, 1701 West Muhammad Ali Boulevard. That is in an 11 to 5 program. I speak at 3. Okay. And then Macon, Georgia, on Sunday the 15th, we will be at the Homeland Village Cultural Center. That's 2910 Napier Avenue. That's a 2-8 program. I speak at 5. And in Harlem, there's a parade that precedes the evening program. And I believe that parade begins around 5 p.m. in Harlem. And then we will all gather following the parade at 7 at the Metropolitan Baptist Church, 151 West 128th Street, at the corner of Adam Clayton Powell. So Denver, I speak at 3. Denver, I speak at 5. Louisville, I speak at 3. Macon, I speak at 5. In Harlem, I speak at 7. Then, of course, I sign books and everything after the lecture.
Sure. Sure. Good. I know that your work in the education of our children has been monumental. And you've had a couple books out previous to the work that you've done in your field, that when you have a psychiatry and a psychology and so forth. And the problem, of course, is it has not been embraced by our people, because we continue to be led and believe that this system does have our interests at heart, which is proven consistently that it does not. But yet we continue to believe that somehow, some way, that these Caucasians are going to have an epiphany and then suddenly try to do right by us. They never will. It hasn't happened. It's not happening, and it ain't going to happen. But yet we continue, as Jesse Jackson, hold out hope, keep hope alive. But to me, that's the key piece for us in our liberation, is the education of our children, to begin to instill in them the knowledge of themselves, a pride in themselves, the history, which, of course, if it's Caucasians, it's critical race theory. In fact, what do you think about that?
Well, I don't have a problem necessarily with the critical race theory approach to scholarship and research and education and academia. I haven't looked at the specific tenets of the platform, but in theory, I don't take issue with it. What I take issue with is the fact that Black scholars continue to seek European validation for their own intellectual ideas and systems. Why do you need the United States government to validate critical race theory? Why do you need America's universities to implement it? Why do we need the stamp of approval from the very same people who you claim have done so much wrong to your own people? Why do you need them to validate something designed to expose who they really are? It is a contradiction for me to say that this group of people have done this to my people, and this is how inherently evil they are. And that in studying their history, we need to make sure that the world understands that the central cause for everything that America has become has been the dehumanization and the physical objectification of African people. How can you say that and then turn around and go to those very same people who you say are incapable of practicing justice? How can you go right back to them and say, okay, validate this system that's going to show who you really are, who you really have been, and expose your entire creed of freedom, justice, and democracy as a falsity and a scam? Why would you go back to them? So for me, the greater hypocrisy is on the side of the critical race theory proponents. Why do you need white people to validate your approach? And then it goes a little bit deeper, Baba Oshie, from the perspective that the reason they need white people to validate critical race theory is because they don't plan on teaching it in the ghetto. They don't plan on teaching it at the HBCU. They don't plan on teaching it in the Black community. Many of these CRT theorists and proponents are interested in being accepted by white academia and the white elite circle. They want to work at Harvard, and they want to work at Yale and Princeton. They want to be a part of these white intellectual think tanks. So a part of this critical race theory piece, the hypocritical aspect of it, is that you're really not interested in teaching this to Black people. You really want it validated by white people because you want to stay amongst the circle of whites.
Hmm. Yeah. And that's the issue that we must look at it from, but we don't. In fact, many of us, you know, I don't know why you should use that word many, but there are some of us who have sided with Caucasians and challenging critical race theory, although we don't know what the hell it is. Just like this politician here who switched from being a Democrat to a Republican and is going to run for the Senate, Vernon Jones, what a Negro. And he was on one program talking about
why we should get rid of critical race theory, and he was asked numerous times what it is, and he couldn't explain it. He had no clue. But since the Caucasians said, we got to get rid of critical race theory, then he's like, yes, boss, we do. We got to get rid of it, you know. You don't have a damn clue. I mean, the bottom line.
To be honest with you, it's a distraction in many respects, Baba Oshie. From a Garveyite perspective, it's a distraction because the proponents of critical race theory aren't trying to implement this in the black community, because if they really wanted to teach this, they could teach it in any church.
Sure.
They could teach it in any community. I mean, why do you need to go to white folks to get a validation? It's because you want to teach it to white people. You want to be anointed by white people. You want to be applauded by your oppressor. What's stopping you from teaching critical race theory to black children? You know what's stopping you? You're not going to get paid for it. That's what's stopping you. See, a lot of this is about capitalism, because think about it. If the white man approves the critical race theory, now an entire curriculum goes along with that critical race theory. So now books have to be made, workbooks. There's a lot of money in publishing. There's a lot of money in curriculum. Anytime a new curriculum gets approved, that's an entire economic operation that's going to follow that, because you now can market. You can now market the curriculum through a variety of different products. So at the end of the day, what is this really about? It ain't about the liberation of black people. It's not.
No.
You know, it's no different than when Afrocentricity was pushed, right? We had the big Afrocentricity wave, and now you got all these colleges that have a PhD in African-centered studies. Here's my question. Here's the question. 20, 30 years later, you got all these colleges with PhDs in Africana studies, most of them white colleges, mind you. What has been the sum benefit to African people as a result of these PhDs in Africana studies? How has the black community improved after an entire generation of black PhDs in Africana studies have graduated from the university? I don't see no benefit nowhere, because they graduate with a PhD in Africana studies and they go work for a white college, or even if they go work for a black college, they're not doing anything else except teaching. They're not doing anything in the community, not building institutions. They're not contributing to the empowering of black communities. And of course, there's some exceptions to this, so I don't want to paint everybody with the same brush. My point is, a lot of these black philosophical, intellectual, theoretical systems that pop up, from the Africana Studies PhD to the critical race theory, they are really a talented tenth sort of an idea. They are really a talented tenth sort of an agenda, because nothing ever trickles down to black people. I mean, how many of these black PhDs do you see teaching black children their history in the ghetto? I don't know one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know one of them. Show me a black PhD in Africana Studies who's teaching free black history to black children in a ghetto anywhere in America. I don't know one of them. And the big mistake we cannot make, Baba Oshie, is confuse the agenda of the Negro talented tenth with the agenda of the black masses. And I really believe that critical race theory is a talented tenth agenda that has nothing in store for the masses of black people.
Does that go along with 1619 Project?
Same thing.
It was
Baba Oshie, the question becomes, when do we, and don't get me wrong, our history is critical. That's our foundation. Honorable Marcus Garvey said, "The people who do not know their history is like a tree without roots. You cannot stand the test of time." So we will not diminish the need to know who we are. But at the same time, Baba Oshie, we need some balance. Central principle of African spirituality is balance. When do we start focusing on the African present and the African future? 99% of all conferences are dealing with the African past. When are we going to deal with the African present? And when are we going to deal with the African future? If all we're going to do is focus on where we've been and we don't deal with where we are, and more importantly, talk about where we're going to go, we're going to lose. We can't keep running back to the future. We got to go forward to the future. The Sankofa bird looks back, but it's moving forward. I don't see the movement aspect of our approach to history.
And see, that's what it's supposed to have been, that you look back so you can go forward. in terms of looking at Sankofa. You're looking back to go forward. So it was important for us to look back all the way to ancient Kemet, understand that, look back all the way to the beginning of humanity, because that is us. That is us. But it should help us in the present to understand where we are so we can prepare for our future. You know, I only have one quote. I don't know if it's original, but I came up with it many years ago. We must understand our past so we can prepare. We must study our past so we can understand our present, so then we can prepare for our future. A lot of us don't have a damn clue about what's happening in the present, and therefore many of us don't even see a future for us.
Exactly. And that's one of the reasons why here at the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey RBG, International Leadership Academy for Pan-African Excellence, we will teach political science as a curricular subject, not just history. There will be history class, but there will be political science class too, because I think one of the constructive criticisms I will have about the Black Studies movement is that it dealt a lot with the past, necessarily so, because we didn't know who we are.
Right.
We had people lying to us, telling us we was from Mexico, and we was from Arab, and we was from the Middle East, and all this other foolishness. So it was very important for our grandmaster teachers to correct the historical record that had been distorted by a lot of these Black nationalist groups who are anti-African in their foundation.
Right.
So that was necessary. But at the same time, I don't think we've done a good enough job educating our people about their political present. Because I know a lot of us who are extremely intelligent with the history. But when you start talking about the present day situation of what's going on, from COVID to the gender side, as I call it, the same sex for children movement, you know, sex relations for children movement that Barack Obama ushered in with his presidency. They don't know what's going on. They don't understand it. You know, the autism piece, they don't understand it. The mass incarceration, the gentrification, the police genocide, the economic genocide. You see, so we got to make sure our people understand what's going on now. One of the reasons the politicians have been so effective at exploiting Black people for votes without giving them anything is because our people don't have a solid political education. They don't understand it. They don't understand the way politics operates. They don't understand that until you use your money to leverage your political strength, you're never going to get anything. As long as Black folks think the most important thing they could do politically is vote, we'll never get anywhere. You have to leverage your money. The LGBTQ, they leverage their money when it comes to election time. The Jewish community, the Arabs, the East Indians, the Mexicans, the Latinos, everybody leverages their financial power in order to achieve political power. Black people think they're going to change something voting without using their money to leverage that political influence. Money controls politics. Money has always controlled politics, and money will always forever control politics. So until Black people organize ourselves financially, and that's one of the greatnesses of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, he was able to organize us financially, not just philosophically, not just politically, not just socially or intellectually or culturally, but financially. The one movement we have not had in this country in quite some time. The last time we did it was in Garvey Day, with the Garvey movement as well as the Black Wall Streets that existed around the country at that time, many of which were influenced by Garvey's work. But the 1920s, 100 years ago now, that was the last time you saw Black people economically organized in a systemic and comprehensive way. We have not been economically organized in 100 years, and everything we're going through is a result of that lack of economic organization.
And you can see that. I was fortunate to go to Tulsa for the anniversary and the commemoration of that massacre, not a race riot, it was a massacre, and talked to a number of people, you know, of all the things that happened there. They're down to one street on Greenwood, just one block. And at the end of the block, there's a museum that has been established through the finances of the European Jews. And that's it. And even from that, there's no money to go to the few descendants, to the few survivors, because there were three people there who were survivors, you know. And then, of course, then all the descendants. And There was one brother, Brother Umar, there was one brother immediately after this situation happened, very sharp brother, don't remember his name, but in his provided tent by the American Red Cross, he set up where people would come in and talk about their place, their address, the things they had at their place. He was documenting all this information so he could present this to the insurance company and to the authorities for retribution, for compensation for what had been lost and what had been done to them. And they kept being denied. He was thorough in his work. He kept being denied to the point that said, well, sorry, the statute of limitations has run out. There ain't no damn statute of limitations on murder. That's happened. Right. There's no statute of limitations, but they kept being denied even to this present day, you know. And then I just, here in Atlanta, me and my family went out to Lake Lanier. Lake Lanier is one of the lakes that they had a black American African township that they vamped on, you know, got rid of the people, and they filled it up with a lake. At the bottom of Lake Lanier is homes. It's just as they were had they left them, if they didn't burn them down or tear them down, you know. And there's a few other places just like that in this country. Well, just like in New York, in Central Park. That was a place that was once ours. You know, these folks have eminent domain. If they want to take something, they don't give a damn. It is their right to do it. And so our problem is that we constantly believe that some way, somehow, that our suffering and what we have endured and continue to endure will somehow be looked at and apologized to, and more importantly, compensated for. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. We are under the illusion. And so we must embrace who we are, what our history tells us. Don't give a damn and don't be afraid of what anybody thinks, because we stand on the side of truth. We know what we speak is true.
I would also add to that, Baba Oshi, too, that we cannot use external issues as a distraction from our need to focus on internal development and internal reparations. I'm a very big proponent of internal reparations. A lot of that is influenced by my background in psychology, understanding that until the person within is in harmony, the person without cannot be. And what I see happening a lot in the black community, including the conscious community, is there's always this need to look towards the oppressor to fix it. You know, there's always this tendency to look at who owes us from without, to the exclusion of what we owe ourselves to within. You know, we often talk a lot, black people, as if we're not a $2 trillion economy. We often speak a lot as if we're not out here every day, you know, wasting $2 billion on Nikes a year, or $4 billion on liquor a year, or $800 million on chicken, turkey, beef, and pork a year. You know, the billions we spend on video games, at the casinos, vacationing, you know, the $30 billion hair and beauty market. When we talk about reparations, you would think that you were talking to people who didn't have any resources. You know, we never talk about why we're not doing more for ourselves with what we have. And that is the conversation that rarely takes place. I am a big proponent of reparations. The Honorable Marcus Garvey, I would argue, is the father of modern reparations. And when he put forward the petition to the League of Nations to turn over to the UNIAACL the German colonies that had been confiscated after World War I, that was your first modern attempt at reparations, and that came from Garvey. But yet and still, with that, we owe ourselves a debt, because a lot of the problems in the black community, Baba Oshi, can't be fixed with money. Okay, you're not going to fix the black male-female relationship issue with money. You're not going to fix self-hatred with money. There's a lot that has to be done to heal that no dollar can solve. And I don't see the black community focusing enough internally on what we do. I keep seeing are these distractions, convenient excuses that we put out there to keep us from taking accountability for our own reality. So, for example, with the reparations, I am of the firm opinion that until we have an infrastructure, until Black America has recreated the Black Wall Street that we celebrate every year, but has not replicated, that's a contradiction. How can you celebrate something that you can recreate yourself and choose not to do it? There's over a dozen cities for sale in this country. There's over a dozen cities for sale. If you go online and type in cities for sale in the United States, they pop up. There's cities in California. There's cities in Georgia. There's cities up in New England. There's cities for sale all across this country, some of them for less than $1 million.
Wow.
Why haven't we taken all of them and built Black Wall Streets? The point that I want to make is I would like for us to continue to fight for the reparations, but I do not want us to access the disbursement of those reparations.
I agree.
I want that to be left to a later generation.
Yeah.
Because we are too economically irresponsible.
I agree.
We are too politically undedicated that if we accessed whatever that concession will be, we will waste it, and our children unborn, generations not yet manifested, will not be able to benefit from that package. Too often, Baba Oshie, when we talk reparations, people think reparations are only for living Africans. Reparations are not only for living Africans. They're for the ancestors to make sure their memory is restored, but also they are for offspring not yet born.
Yeah.
So that reparations package is not just for those on the planet. It's for those who are still, who still have not yet occupied the planet. And if we got it, Baba Oshie, this generation of Black folks,
please,
we would waste it.
Please, waste it.
In other words, what have we done to lay claim to say that we are the generation who should be the custodian? Think about this now. 400 years plus two. And we're saying that we should be the custodians of that payout on behalf of our oppressors. We should be the custodians for the 400 years of ancestors who came before us and for the 4 trillion millions of years of ancestors who are still yet to be born.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything in our political economic behavior that would make me comfortable being responsible with the reparations.
No. You know, Charles Cuthimer, who was a journalist, a editorialist, and I can't remember if it was the New York Times or Washington, whatever the hell it was, he's dead now anyway. But he wrote a op-ed piece. He said, we should give them reparations. He said, we have given them welfare. We've given them affirmative action. We've given them this. We should give them reparations. It would be just like a big stimulus package. Let's just say it was $20,000 at that time. This is the late 70s, early 80s. We could give them $20,000 an individual and $40,000, $45,000, just some money he made up. He said, don't worry, because we're going to get that money back in less than a year. We'll have Cadillac sales. We'll have jewelry and so forth sales, because they won't pull that money together and build institutions. They'll be happy as individuals spending money on frivolous things. And to me, you know, it was on point. I hate to say it, just like you're saying, it's on point. To me, I'm definitely down with reparations, but reparations is, in containing the word reparations, is repair. And we must repair ourselves as a people, repair our culture, repair for our future. It's not a spending thing that you got this money and now, you know, you can buy a nice house. You can go move out of the ghetto and drive a nice car. No, we should pull that money together, and not just to build institutions here, but globally. In fact, really global reparations is what's needed and deserve, because it was Europeans, whether they're British, French, German, whatever, Portuguese, help the Belgians, them mother. Oh man, I can't. Well, you know, I can't stand all the Europeans, because they all dogged us out and refused to compensate us, to refuse to even make some kind of restitution for what they have done. It's almost like, okay, we did it. Because in some mind of some of these Caucasians, and even us, we should be thankful that Europeans came and took us and educated us.
We could be back in Africa worshiping a tree, worshiping a rock. So we should be happy that we are here in America. You know, this is the mindset that some of us have. That's why it's necessary that we can't do it here, Brother Umar. It cannot be done here. I think it would take a serious miracle because we're in the midst of an open and sworn enemy. When I just talked about Black Wall Street, there is no place. There were places, there were Tulsa, and not just in Tulsa, but Boley, Rosewood, Allentown, Elaine, Arkansas. There were many places. In fact, even more contemporary, the Haiti community in North Carolina, in Philadelphia, Reverend Dr. Leon Sullivan, he built a shopping area. Is that still in existence? Brother Umar, are you there? I guess I lost him.
Sorry, Bob. We hit the mute. Yes, the Progress Plaza Shopping Center. It's still there in North Philadelphia. I actually grew up right there in that neighborhood. That's where my mother bought about 90% of our groceries. But that area around it has been thoroughly gentrified.
See?
So Progress Plaza is still black owned from what I understand.
Okay.
It's still thriving. You know, I go there just about every day to purchase something. But the neighborhood, which was once a black neighborhood, has been thoroughly gentrified at this point.
Yeah. Where I live here in Atlanta is being gentrified. That up my tax lien up to $150 a month. This gentrification ain't no damn joke. But
let us be clear about that, Baba Oshie. The gentrification, again, looking at our responsibility in this, they could not move us around the way that they do if we operated as community.
Yes.
But we don't operate as community.
Black people
don't do anything in a group. Mm-mm. We might do it in a clique, but we don't do it in a group.
No.
And the difference between a clique and a group is the clique is only a handful of people. That's not strong enough to fight off an entire system of white supremacy. You understand? But if you do it in a group as a community and hundreds and thousands, it'd be almost impossible for them to move into our neighborhoods and just clean us out like that. They can't do that to other neighborhoods. I've even seen impoverished Latino neighborhoods, Baba Oshie. They can't even move them out because they work as a group. They all refuse to move. Ain't nobody selling. This is our neighborhood because they know once you let one of them in, okay, they're going to start trickling in. And before you know it, they're going to uproot the whole community because white people don't share power. And this is something that black people still don't understand after 400 years. White people do not share power. When they come to monopolize. They believe in monopoly. They're going to monopolize your community. They're going to monopolize the businesses. They're going to monopolize the real estate. So there's no such thing as having just one white person. That doesn't exist. You will have one in the beginning, but you will have 100% of them in the end. They do not share. They come to conquer.
Wow, I just got a text that says that another brother from Philadelphia said Asians are buying up a lot of the properties or businesses in the plaza, which is not surprising, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
And they're blocking other black people from opening up businesses around that plaza area. There was a black-owned dollar store that had opened up, I believe it was either in Progress Plaza or right across the street from Progress Plaza. In the Asian dollar store, which I don't think neither one of them are around anymore, they actually blocked the black-owned dollar store from operating. And I said to myself, how in the hell can an Asian business block a black-owned business from operating in a black-owned shopping center?
Yeah.
But they were able to do it through their Asian American Business Association. The Chinese did the same thing in West Philly. I had heard that they were blocking African businesses from opening up on a particular business strip through their Chinese American Business Association. Because everybody operates in a group.
Right,
except
us.
Black people. The only time we operate in a group, Baba, is when we're dealing in religion. And the problem with that is most religions in the black community do not have a political agenda.
No. No, it's just about saving you for the hereafter. You know, the pie.
How you going to save me for the hereafter when you can't even save me in the here and now?
Yeah.
If you can't save me in the here and the now, how in the hell you going to save me at a place where you've never been to? That
you just got
to
believe.
Make any sense to me.
You just got to believe. You got to believe.
Oh, man, please. And if the whole system is based on beliefs, Why are you collecting so much money? Yeah. I read a statistic. I think it was $3 billion that black people give the black church. I don't know if that was every month, every week. I don't think it was every year because the number is much higher than that. But if we're spending that type of money, then the black church automatically becomes complicit in the oppression of black people, because what the church does, you're stealing the revolutionary dollars that we need to build the banks. You're stealing the revolutionary dollars that we need to build the hospitals. You're stealing the revolutionary dollars that we need to build the shipping industry, the distribution network, the farms. You know, that's money that is needed to produce infrastructure. And if the black church isn't about building non-religious infrastructure for black people, stop taking the damn money. You are a part of the problem. The black church is not a part of the solution.
No, not at all. And as far as I'm concerned, no, not at all. In fact, you know, with this society, just like the religion, the Christian religion particularly, is an individualistic religion. You know, when people say, I'm saved, I'm highly favored, I'm saved, I'm highly favored, but your community is going to hell. Your family is torn apart, but your ass is saved and highly favored. See? You know, the reality is that these theologies that we believe in, they're not African in origin. No, they're tenets of African spirituality, but they're not African in practice, particularly Christianity.
They're not because, African in practice.
Yep, particularly Christianity, because it's individualistic. And what
in
this society, promotes individualism, materialism, greed, and violence.
That's
it doesn't
right.
promote family.
That's right.
That's why our family situation and structure is so chaotic and so messed up. In fact, in the last, and I know you can attest to this, in the last 50-some years, you know, when we came out of the South and came into the North,
that's
in that
right.
migration, we still had pretty much intact families. I venture to say 70 to 80%, you know, the husband and wife and the children and the grandparents and so were still together. But since the late 60s, 70s and beyond, we've been, especially from the welfare system, which says to the woman getting aid to family with dependent children, you cannot have a man in the house, you know, to get this money. And so he had to hide when the welfare man, just like in the movie Claudine, which is one of my favorite movies, you know. But, you know, this kind of dynamic has been happening. And it destroyed the African family. And then all the other dynamics. It's just like, you know, I was watching this film, just thumbing through YouTube, and came upon this sister adamantly saying, please, no more sisters should come down here to Atlanta. It's, no, don't
right.
come here. Because why? There's a paucity of men. You know,
that's
I remember
right.
this one sister said, where are the men? She said, where are the men? What she was saying, that I don't see the real men. They're there, but where are the men mm-hmm. who are self-defining, self-respecting, who are protectors, who are nurturers, who are givers, who are lovers? Where are the men?
That's right.
You know,
and
for sisters, and here in Atlanta, where sisters got jobs, they got cars, they got a lot, except they don't have a man.
Right.
Because some men who don't want to be with sisters, rather be with Asians, whether be with Caucasians or whatever. There are some men, and homosexuality is a serious issue here in the Atlanta area. Homosexuality.
Yes,
you know, then there's drug addiction and some kind of substance abuse, you know, and of course, mass incarceration. And then, of course, some of them just plain ain't shit. That's just a fact.
That's right.
You know,
and then also your feminism, which
yeah.
is that mental paradigm that is convincing so many young black women to not look towards black men as a mate. And that is a very serious movement, especially on the college campuses, Baba Oshie. It is growing. It is very, very strong. And it's coming at a time when our young people know less now about our struggle and our history than they've ever known. So their politically undereducated minds are ripe to be planted with the seeds of this Eurocentric radical black feminism that in part is coming from the lesbian movement, but it's also a lot of sisters who are heterosexual who do not who support the feminist movement agenda and its teaching towards young black women that you need to start looking away from black men and look towards men of other cultures to build a family with. So these types of intellectual tactics are very, very dangerous. And they're even putting them in grade school now, you know, because even with the gender side movement, you know, the same sex agenda without kids, right next to that is your radical black feminism too. Mm-hmm. So if we don't get them with this, at least we can get her with this. If we can't convince her to be with a woman, we can at least convince her to be with a white man. Mm-hmm. And all of these things have one goal, and that is the destruction of the black family. And that's what I try to get people to understand. Yes. Even when I have conversations with homosexuals and lesbians, I say, hey, even if that's what you want to do with your own life, okay, nobody can stop you from it, but I need you to understand that the systemic promotion of this lifestyle, not your individual preference, I'm talking about the larger political systemic movement to proliferate this lifestyle is not about personal preferences. It's about the destruction of the black family. That's why when you look at most of the commercials now, Baba Oshie, you either see interracial couples or same-sex couples. Yep. You rarely see a black man and a black woman anymore.
Right.
It'll be a white man with a black woman. It'll be a black man with a white woman with a Chinese woman. It'll be a man with a man, a woman with a woman. Why do we see so few examples of black-on-black love? Why is it when it comes to black people, it has to be gay love or interracial love? What happened to the black-on-black love? And I'm telling you, the focus now is the family.
Yeah.
If we can destroy the creation of the black family, if we can stop kids from wanting to reproduce their kind, then we can program and plan the extermination date for black people. People say, why did Obama go to Africa and Hillary Clinton go to Africa and now Joe Biden telling African nations we're going to cut off your funding if you don't approve gay marriage? Why do you care whether or not gay marriage is legal in Liberia or Kenya? Why do you, or Tanzania? Why does the U.S. government give a damn about gay marriage in Africa where it has never been legal for millennia? Why now? Because you know if you can get it to take root in Africa, you can start focusing on the extermination of the traditional black family. Mm-hmm. That's why they're pushing this thing. Mm-hmm. That's why they're pushing the feminism. It's about the elimination of the black family, and that's why we got to stay focused.
Well, listen, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'll take questions for Dr. Umar Johnson, further discuss issues, the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy. We'll talk about some international things that are happening on the continent, because some serious things are happening on the continent. So stay with us, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Smoking pipes, pavement gamblers, rolling down. mind them in the air shine so, so bright. But they can give a fuck in they crib, it's no lights. Everybody rhyme and they claim they don't write. It down, sit down, take it all in. Civilization, this is where it all ends. The city I call Ken, yo, so take caution. It's the sound of Philadelphia, gunshots and pretty beats. Come along with me, hear my city speak. It's talking to you, it's giving you a heads up. It's saying that niggas round here is getting fed up. It's the sound of Philadelphia, gunshots and pretty beats. Come along with me, hear my city speak. It's talking to you, it's giving you a heads up. It's saying that niggas round here is getting fed up. All stoops, the fruits of our labor are made by moves that's major. Hood gossip, never news from the newspaper. Don't ask me for shit, we never do favors. The elders are now just a bunch of recluse neighbors. Tax scholars go to prisons, new judges, new chambers. Love it when you lose, kill you if you came up. Niggas passing disease, fucking the same slut. You either cutting a demo or getting cane cut. Don't go to school, they'll treat you like a lame duck. You ain't my master, yeah, it's a shame, but what do you expect from kids who need respect? Cause no one was at home for them to learn respect from. We respect guns, we respect funds. Let's face it, my future don't look like the Jetsons. Don't ask the government for help, couldn't we expect none? Our heroes get murdered, replaced with the next one. It's like a Wild West gun. A way out, I hope I get one. But I doubt that will happen, cause the crab's in a barrel. I probably end up in the cage, cause I had to let a blast from the barrel. The city of Philly. City of Philly. It's the sound of Philadelphia, gunshots and pretty beats. Come along with me, hear my city speak. It's talking to you, it's giving you a heads up. It's saying that niggas round here is getting fed up. It's the sound of Philadelphia, gunshots and pretty beats. Come along with me, hear my city speak. It's talking to you, it's giving you a heads up. It's saying that niggas round here is getting fed up.
We all agree tonight, all of the speakers have agreed, that America has a very serious problem. Not only does America have a very serious problem, but our people have a very serious problem. America's problem is
self-destruction. Get for self-destruction.
Self-destruction, it really ain't the rap audience that's bugging. It's one or two suckers, ignorant brothers, trying to rob and steal from one another. You get caught in the mid. So to crush that stereotype, here's what we did. We got ourselves together so that you could unite and fight for what's right. Not negative cause, the way we live is positive. We don't kill our relatives.
Pop, 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 when it's shot, who's to blame? Headline, front page, and rap's the name. MC Delight here to state the bottom line. The black on black crime was way before our time.
Triple brother's life with a knife, that's his life. Cried cause he died of trifling death. When he left his very last breath, was I slept, so watch your step. Back in the 60s, our brothers and sisters were hanged. How could you gangbang? I never ever ran from the Ku Klux Klan, and I shouldn't have to run from a black man, cause that's
self-destruction.
Funky fresh dress to impress, ready to party. Money in your pocket, dying to move your body. To get inside, you pay the whole $10. Scotch tape with a razor blade, tape to your collar. Leave the guns in the crack and the knobs alone. MC Lights on the microphone. Bum rushing and pushing, snatching and taxing. I cram to understand why brothers don't be maxing. There's only one disco, they'll close one more. You ain't guarding the door, so what you got a gun for? Do you rob the rich and give to the poor? Yo, daddy-o, school him some more.
Straight from the mouth. And daddy O
do a crime,
end up in jail,
and gotta go.
Cause you could do crime and get paid today, and tomorrow you're behind bars in the worst way.
Far from your family,
cause you're locked away.
Now tell me,
do you really think crime pays?
Speaking on taking what your brother had,
you little sucker.
You talking all that jazz.
It's time to stand together in a unity. Cause if not, then you're soon to be self-destroyed, unemployed.
race will be lost without a trace or a clue. But what to do is stop the violence and kick the science down the road that we call eternity, where knowledge is formed and you learn to be self-sufficient, independent. To teach to each is what rap intended, but society wants to invade. So do not walk this path that they laid. It's
self-destruction. Get ready for self-destruction. Self-destruction.
This is all about, no doubt, to stop violence. But first, let's have a moment of silence. Swing. This has been stated, re-educated, evaluated. Thoughts of the past have faded. The only thing left is the memories of our belated. And I hate it when someone dies to get all hurt up for a silly gold chain by a chump.
Word up.
It doesn't make you a big man. And to one and go and dish your brother, man. And you don't know that's part of the plan. Why? Because rap music is in full demand. Understand?
Self-destruction.
My name is Just Ice, a man, not a prankster. I was known as the gangster. But believe me, that is no fun. The time is now to unite everyone. You don't have to be soft to be for peace. Robbing and killing and murdering is the least. You don't have to be chained by the beast. But party people, it's time I release.
Hey, yo, here's the situation. Idiocy, nonsense, violence, not a good policy. Therefore, we must ignore fighting, fussing. Heaven's at the door, so there'll be no bum rushing. Let's get together because we're falling apart. I heard a brother shot another, it broke my heart. I don't understand the difficulty, people. Love your brother, treat him as an equal. They call us animals, I don't agree with them. I'll prove them wrong, but right is what you're proving them. Take heed before I leave to what I'm saying, or we'll all be on our knees praying.
Heavy deep. Deep in the heart of the matter, the self-destruction is served on a platter. Making a day, not failing to anticipate. They got greedy, so they fell for the bait. That makes them a victim, picked and plucked. New jack in jail, but to the vets, they're a duck. There's no one around, cause in jail, you're a number. They never took the time to wonder about
self-destruction.
To merge, we live for the love of our people, the hope they get along.
Yeah, so we did a song.
Getting a point to our brothers and sisters who don't know the time.
Boy, so we run around.
Instead in your heads, you know our job to build and collect ourselves with intellect.
Come on.
To revolve, to evolve the self-respect.
Cause we got to keep ourselves in check,
or else it's
self-destruction.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, once again. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I'm going to make these announcements and we're going to get back to our conversation with Dr. Umar Johnson. Starting today, August 11th, Baba Baruti, Baba Mwalimu Baruti, will be having his class on Centered. And that begins tonight at 7:30, from 7:30 to 9. And you can participate. Go to PayPal or Cash App. It is $10 per session. It's a month course, or $45 for the total course. And it's, I put in the information, Centered course, your name, and then your email address where they can send you the link so you could be a part of the program, part of the training program on African-centeredness, Baba Mwalimu Baruti. The other piece is my guest on Friday was going to be Dr. Ranoka Rashidi, but he made his transition on his annual tour to Kemet, and the brother who just got back. In fact, Ranoka was coming in, and Oshawa Kwesi and his group were coming out, and part of that group was a good brother, Brother Bashir Muhammad Pata, Akinyele. You've probably read him in Your Black World, other syndicated publications, and also to the Atlanta Black Star. And he'll be my guest on Friday. We'll talk about his experiences on tour and as well talk about the transition of our good brother, Dr. Renoka Rashidi. And then on Monday, Mama Tamu Kenyama, she wrote a book on the, this is the 50th year of that shootout. It was August 18th, 1971 in Jackson, Mississippi, when those folks vamped on the Republic of New Africa in a shootout. And she experienced that, her and her husband, Baba Akima Kenyama. And so we'll be talking with her on Monday. And then the book signing is on Wednesday, and I definitely will be there. So let's get back to our conversation with Dr. Umar Johnson. We have a lot to talk about. Okay, Brother Umar. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I'm here, Baba. The other thing I wanted to let your listening audience know as well, Baba, because I neglected to mention it, and that is on the 190th anniversary of the Nat Turner War, mm-hmm. as well as the anniversary of the Haitian Revolutionary
right. yeah.
War and the George Jackson Prison War, which
yep.
is August the 21st.
This is Black August.
I will. Yes, sir. Black August. I
yeah.
will be in the state of Wisconsin for a doubleheader.
Ah, and that's right. That's right. I saw that.
Is yes, sir. The first event is in the morning, and that is the Justice for Jacob Blake Riley.
Okay.
Jacob Blake is our brother who was shot and paralyzed by the police in Kenosha, Wisconsin, on August the 23rd of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
His father is having the commemoration march in Raleigh on August the 21st, because it's a Saturday. And so I'll be in Kenosha, Wisconsin for the first time on Saturday, August the 21st, and that will be at the Civic Center Park in Kenosha, 957th Avenue. We're asking that everyone from around the country wants to come and show support for not only Brother Jacob, but for all our victims of police shootings, police maimings, police homicide. Please come out and join us with the March and Raleigh, which will be at the Civic Center Park in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is located at 957th Avenue. Civic Center Park, 957th Avenue in Kenosha, from 12 until 4 on the 21st, which will be the first time in the past decade that I have not spent August the 21st at Nat Turner Land in Virginia, which is where I usually spend my solar return, because that's my birthday as well. And I'll be in Kenosha, so this will be different for me because I'm used to being in Virginia on August the 21st. But we will bring the ancestors with us to Kenosha for the Justice of Jacob Blake Riley on the 21st. And then in the evening, also on Saturday the 21st, I'll be in Milwaukee, where I haven't been in 6-7 years as well. And we will be at the Generation of Excellence Community Center. That's the Generation of Excellence Community Center in Milwaukee, from 7 until 10 p.m. It is a free event, 6633 West Mill Road, 6633 West Mill Road. I will do a lecture, and it will also be the Wisconsin State book release for the new book, Black Parent Advocate. So two events, same day, same state, Kenosha and Milwaukee, Black August, Wisconsin, Saturday, August the 21st.
Ashe. And, of course, that's where I'm from, Milwaukee. Yeah, had some good times in Milwaukee, Brother Umar.
Yes, sir.
I remember, yeah. So let us talk now about the Academy. You know, one of the things that when I got a communication from you and wanted to get back with you, because I've seen you on a number of things on YouTube, and just, I mean, some of the good stuff that you were really putting out, you know, and I was wondering, where is the, you know, what progress has been made on establishing the Academy?
Yes, indeed. Well, as you know, we purchased the Academy 1 week before the Honorable Frederick Douglass's 201st birthday in the year of his bicentennial, which is February the 7th of 2019. So the school was purchased in the bicentennial year of Frederick Douglass's birth, and it was also purchased in the centennial year of the Honorable Marcus Garvey's Black Star Line Steamship Company Incorporation, which was done right here in Delaware. And so I don't think that that's a coincidence that we got that school, you know, during a very, very historic centennial and bicentennial celebrations for the two namesakes for which the school will represent. I'm actually at the school right now because we're painting the small gym, which has been dedicated to Jean-Jacques Dessalines and Nat Turner. And we're hoping to possibly be using the gym soon for some meetings and other events. We just sent off the payment of $47,000 to replace the HVAC unit on the small school roof. It's a custom-made unit, and so it's going to take 90 days for production. So my timeline, which was to have the school ready to go at the end of the summer, has been obliterated by finding out the fact that it takes 90 days to get the unit made because it is a custom-made unit. So we're waiting on the train company now. They have the money. They told us it takes 90 days to make it. So Halloween is when we're expecting to get the rooftop unit. We already have the HVAC who's going to link it up for us. I think we're okay for plumbing right now. We're working on a plumber who might be able to go ahead and get the plumbing knocked out. We did have an electrical contractor in there. We're just about done with the electric stuff. So we're moving. We're moving. It's slow progress only because we can't control the quality of people we find, and we can't control the timeline for, you know, renovations, just like with what happened with the HVAC unit. I had no idea that that was a custom-made unit, and I had no idea that it would take 90 days to make it. So every time I think we're close to the finish line, that finish line gets pushed out a little bit further. I am Queen. I'm on a radio interview right now. That's okay. Swing back around in about an hour. Okay, Lau. And so we pushing. But let me do say this, though, and I'm glad you brought up the school because I would have forgot to announce this to the listening audience, which would have been a big mistake. On Saturday, September the 11th.
Oh, 9-11.
Saturday, September the 11th, 9-1-1, which is the date we celebrate Ethiopian New Year. September 11th is the beginning of Ethiopian New Year. We will be having the first ever FDMG Black Power Block Party, a.k.a. Unapologetically African Festival. It will be right here on the grounds of FDMG. Although we do not yet have certificates to occupy the buildings, we will have our festival right outside on the street. We will have vendors. We will have food. We will have giveaways. There will be a book bag giveaway. There will be a festival. I will be doing my keynote at 3:30. Also, the Universal African Dance and Drum Ensemble, the world-famous Universal African Dance and Drum Ensemble, will be performing. And so we're going to have a great day on Saturday, September the 11th. So we're asking everybody who supports the FDMG Academy and supports Dr. Umar to please come out and celebrate with us. We're celebrating the people who have helped us acquire this beautiful campus. We're celebrating how far we have come, and we're also celebrating the fact that we are very close to the finish line for the renovations of the Garvey Building and the small gymnasium. So anyone who wants to come, it is free, but you must register. FDMGregistration.com. I repeat, FDMGregistration.com. If you want to be a vendor, please email and request an application to FDMG Vending, V-E-N-D-I-N-G, FDMG Vending at gmail.com for vending. And if you want to sing, dance, perform, spoken word, do an instrument, if you want to get up on the stage and showcase your talent, you can request an application at FDMG Performances. That's E-S on the end. That's plural. FDMG P-E-R-F-O-R-M-A-N-C-E-S, FDMGPerformances@gmail.com, or FDMGVending@gmail.com, registration, FDMGFestival.com, and if anybody needs the flyer for the festival, they can text my cell phone at 215-989-9858. I repeat, 215-989-9858. If you're flying into the festival, fly into the Philadelphia International Airport. The FDMG campus is exactly 22 minutes away from the Philadelphia International Airport. Of course, BWI down in Baltimore, Washington, Dulles. Baltimore is about 90 minutes from FDMG. D.C. is 2 hours from FDMG. We're 20 minutes from South Jersey, 20 minutes from Northern Maryland, 20 minutes from Southern Pennsylvania, and, of course, we're in the heart of Delaware. So very easy to get to from the four state areas of Jersey, Maryland, and who am I missing? Pennsylvania. So, yes, indeed. Come on out, family. Bring the family. We're going to have book bags for the kids. We're going to have games for the children. They can win prizes. We're going to have food, vending, networking. Make sure you take a picture with Dr. Umar on the sacred red, black, and green rock of FDMG. It's our first public event. We are looking forward to it. We're ordering all these T-shirts. The giveaway is just going to be a really fun day. You don't want to miss your free FDMG merchandise bag. You will only get the merchandise bag, your free merchandise bag, which includes your T-shirt and everything else,
if you register.
If you don't register, you won't get it.
Yep. Got it. And you register by going to FDMGFestival.com. Okay. So,
and if they missed all that, Baba Oshie, they can text me for it, 215-989-9858, 215-989-9858. And with today being August 11th and the festival being September 11th, we are exactly 30 days away. The countdown begins.
Okay, that's FDMGFestival.com.
And we want them to come, Baba Oshie, so they can see the school. In other words, they won't be able to get inside, but, you know, there's been a lot of rumors saying we don't own it, or it's a shack and it's a hole in the wall. I promise you this, when they walk on this block and see what we got, everybody who bought into that propaganda is going to be amazed to see that these are beautiful, modern schools. These are not old, antique, Catholic school-looking buildings. These are modern. This campus is only 10 years old. It was built from the ground on a $13 million budget. So we are talking about modern buildings. And once they are ready to go, we will be the largest independent black school campus in America. And we will be the only independent black school in the country who actually owns and controls two school buildings. We have the Garvey Building on the left side of the street, the Douglas Building on the right side of the street, and we have two gymnasiums, the large gymnasium inside of the Frederick Douglass High School, and the small gymnasium, Nat Turner John Jock Dessalines, which is next to the Garvey Elementary School. Yeah. And we still have a fourth building on the corner that we still have not decided what its use will be. So we will be the biggest independent school in the country.
You know,
and when I say independent, Baba, I'm meaning in the traditional sense of independent.
Right.
That
right.
means no loans from white people.
Right.
No grants from white people.
Yeah, solely supported by us.
But they're not.
Right.
They're not
solely supported by us.
They're getting funded from white folks. We are truly independent.
There was a charter school established in Kansas City, Missouri, by Brothers and Sisters of National Black United Front. And I remember going there to a National Black United Front meeting, and they took me around and showed me what they were going to do, and they did it. They had members on the school board. They had members in the council, you know, and it happened. It happened. In fact, we had a convention in Kansas City at that school. That school had four buildings. It had an athletic area. I mean, they had a stadium. They had a high school, a middle school, elementary school, and an administrative building. The administrative building was named after Dr. John Henry Clark. The auditorium that we did a lot of our work in was named after Dr. Asa Hilliard. The teachers were in daishikis. The children were in uniforms.
It was school beautiful. Still there, Bob?
No. No, there
was a charter, right?
Yeah. And you know who kind of did them in? Malefi Ketiasante. Malefi Ketiasante. Yeah, he did them in. This Caucasian, this European Jew who was on the school board wrote to, I guess that's what he did. And they sent this Negro down to be the superintendent and challenged them, and they took the school. That school was producing tremendously academically. And now it's at the bottom. It was producing accolades. They took that school from those brothers and sisters. And Malefi Ketiasante came in the dark of night to collect six figures and was out of town before sun up. And I got this from a brother who's, Brother Jamu, whose integrity is beyond reproach.
So believe me, this is what I'm saying. And in fact, I've said to myself, if I ever see Malefi Asante, and I was in Philadelphia, because I know he's still at Temple, right? I'd bust his ass out because that was so wrong that these Negroes came together and did this to this community. These brothers and sisters worked hard to establish that school. But of course, it wasn't independent. You know,
it wasn't independent. And yeah. You see with that example, Baba, I wasn't aware of all of that that went down. So I can't speak to it, right. But I will say this. You saw just with that example as to why you need to own your own school.
Yeah.
That them charter schools were not started for us. They were started for white folks, and because they were started for white folks to use public money to create a school that appears to be private but is still publicly owned, whenever black people open up charter schools, the state always takes an adversarial disposition towards us. Everywhere there's black charter schools, there's drama with the state because they don't want you to have them.
Right.
They don't want you to have them, and even though the money is free because it comes with the student, Baba, and that's really the attraction of the charter school. The attraction of the charter school is you don't have to worry about the funding because the money that the student got from the public school comes to them when they enroll at the charter school. So that's the attraction. But what we don't see hidden in that attraction is a lot of evil energy, Baba, because the hoops that they make you jump through.
Yeah. And not only that.
And the expectations and the requirements, it is almost impossible for you to meet them all.
Right, it's because ridiculous. you could not solely have an African center curriculum administered at those schools. You have to go by the dictates of the public instruction, the Department of Public Instruction.
The charter school is an alternative public school by law, Baba, by law. You do not own it. And the big mistake we made, Baba, was we were fighting for community control in the 60s and 70s. Remember that?
Yes.
We wanted to control the public schools, community control. We wanted to decide who gets hired, who gets fired. We wanted to approve what got taught. You can hire who you want, but we got to confirm who you want. It's just like the Supreme Court. The president can nominate an attorney general, but we got to approve that attorney general. You can nominate a Supreme Court justice, but the Congress has to approve them. Mm-hmm. That's what community control was all about. But when they rolled out that charter in the 90s, Baba, a lot of these black community activists, and I'm not judging, I'm just giving the historical record. A lot of these black community activists saw that money, and they said, well, you know what? Maybe we don't need to keep fighting for community control. Because if we open up a charter, we can pay ourselves a nice salary, and we ain't even got to do no work.
You know, Milwaukee.
So Dr. Umar opens up a charter school, Baba, I'll make myself the CEO. Pay myself $150,000, but then I'm going to hire me a principal to do all the work. So I'm on the payroll, but I'm not doing anything to earn this money. And that's what a lot of charter schools, black and white, do, Baba. Yeah. It is a very good way to earn an income for yourself without really doing any work. Now, don't get me wrong. There are CEOs who do work. Don't get me wrong.
But no.
Yet and still, you know, most schools never had a CEO in the traditional sense. You just had a principal.
Yeah. Because I've experienced
CEO
that.
But the creation of the charter school to get paid.
Yeah, I've experienced that in Milwaukee because Milwaukee is one of the leaders in that area. Her name escapes me right now. She's an ancestor. She was a legislator. Her and some others established a charter school. I know Brother Michael Holt of the Milwaukee Community Journal, he wrote a book on it. And many, just as you said, people came in there with the idea, the scrupulous idea of getting all this cash. There's one
this one brother came in
with all this cash that he got, bought himself two cars, and basically the school was a shell. It did not even function. And it has happened, you know. But one thing that is necessary for us, for African people, for us as a people, if we're going to ever get up out of this madness, is to educate ourselves. Have control of the curriculum. Have control.
Control, Baba.
Yes.
Control.
Total control.
We are so thirsty for free money that we fail to recognize what we lose. Look at all these charter schools being shut down. Black charter schools all across the country. Baba, I'm getting emails damn near every month. Another black charter school is either shut down or at risk of losing a charter or being charged with financial misappropriations, or the test scores are too low, or one of the white teachers is accusing them of racism. Why go through all that? For what?
Yeah.
Open up your own, and that is the message that I'm taking to Denver Friday. That is the message I'm taking to Louisville Saturday. That's the message I'm taking to Macon, Georgia Sunday, to Harlem on Tuesday, to Kenosha on the 21st, to Milwaukee on the night of the 21st, and also, Baba, I'll be in St. Croix, the U.S. Virgin Islands, on August the 28th. The Rastafari community is inviting me out there to keynote the 84th anniversary of the Ethiopian World Federation, which turns 84 years old this summer. And so I'll be in St. Croix, which, as you know, is a U.S. territory.
Right.
So they also, you know, are part of this whole American white supremacist power structure.
Exactly.
So that's my same message there. Mm-hmm. Why go through all – I see what charter schools go through. Baba, I'm a former charter school principal and vice principal. I never will put myself through that. Because the minute they decide they want to shut you down, Baba, they'll make up a reason.
Mm-hmm.
They'll create something.
Right.
It's just worth it.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing too many black people – whether we talking charter schools, Baba, whether we talking community buildings, community organizations, 85% of all black infrastructure is financially controlled by white folks. And that is embarrassing.
Say that again.
You can hardly
say
find
that,
a
say,
black
say that again. How much?
That is not taking white money.
Say that 85 again.
85 to 95% of all black infrastructure is controlled by white folks financially.
Mm.
The NAACP, totally funded by whites.
Mm-hmm.
Urban League. Totally funded by whites. Most of your community-based organizations, totally funded by whites. Many of your fraternities and sororities, the Divine Nine, funded by whites. How the hell can you fight for black people when you're taking white money? And when you take that money, Baba, compromises your political integrity.
Exactly.
Because now you can't say that you support the black man with the black woman. You can't say that.
No, because you can't.
Because that goes against the multicultural approach of this government. You can't say same-sex relationships is a threat to the black family. You can't say that. So not only are you taking their money, they control what you can say. They control what you can do. When I go speak, Baba, damn near everywhere I speak, I got to have a conversation with the person bringing me in because they're getting funded by white folks. And they're like, Dr. Umar, well, you know, the funders, they're a little concerned about you coming in because you don't support homosexuality and you don't support... I said, I done got to support it, but I'm not coming here to talk about it either. I know you're getting white man's money, so I'm not going to talk about black man's issues. You understand? I'm going to keep it real clean and real cut and dry so you don't get in no trouble. Mm-hmm. But yet and still, they be so afraid, Baba, because they're like, if Dr. Umar says the wrong thing, these white folks going to pull the chair out from under us, man. I'm embarrassed. I know the Honorable Marcus Garvey is embarrassed. All of our Pan-African nationalist forefathers and mothers are embarrassed that 400 years later, we still want to beg from white folks while we waste $2 trillion a year. Why do a people who have that type of money that we waste every day, Baba, got to sit around begging white folks to help us out financially? It don't make no damn sense.
Because we lack unity. We lack any type of functional unity. You know, we're in America, and we're bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of our inability and inferiority and the belief that you're better as an individual. It's all about you. You know, it's all about me and mine. To hell with you and yours. You know, let's talk about Africa, and then we're going to open up the phone lines very briefly because, you know, being a Pan-Africanist and believing that and a member of the Pan-African Federalist Movement, that we must have a united Africa. The salvation for African people lies with Africa being free and controlled by us. That the borders, all of the tribalism, all those things must be broken down. We must think as Africans. Yes, you can keep your traditions. You can keep those things that are special to you and wherever you are in your region, your group, and so forth, in your country.
One love.
You know, but we as African people must come together to control the land and the resources that are African. We sit on a continent that has all of the resources that Dr. John Henry Clark says, and I say in my closing, we sit on a continent that everybody wants, can't do without, and think they don't want to pay for. We sit on that. That is ours. We can't really claim nothing here. The European came here, put his stake down, brought us here to build it up,
And I know some of us talking about, well, you know, this is just as much ours as it is theirs. No, it ain't. No, it ain't. And don't claim it. Don't claim any stolen goods. What you should claim is your birthright. You should, on the continent of Africa. Get Africans on the continent to understand that. And then Africans throughout the diaspora to understand that. And so then now, once that is established, any and everywhere we go, we'll feel good and have pride in who we are. But right now, we are hated everywhere. The European has done a damn good job of making humanity hate people who are melanated to this day. What is one of the big selling things that happens across this world? Bleaching cream. Did you see Sister Serena lately?
Got you, Brother Josh.
Did you see Sister Serena Williams? She lightened her skin. You know, this is crazy. This is madness. This is insanity. This is theirs.
They caught up in there.
Not
probably.
Us.
They caught up.
Yeah.
Had a baby outside the community and everything. And that psychological piece, Baba, is where I really get my impetus to build this academy, man, because if we don't save the minds of the people,
yes,
ain't nothing else worth saving. And of course we need the institutions. That's central to nationalism. You know, we need the schools, we need the banks, we need the hospitals, we need the savings and loans institutions, the distribution networks, we need all of that. But if we don't save the minds of the people, then it ain't worth building nothing else. Now, of course, that goes hand in hand, because you need institutions in order to save those minds. Because right now, our people are either in white institutions or they're under black institutions that are not allowed to be black. And that's a big problem too, Baba. You know, I can remember going to so many different meetings, I'm sure you have as well, where you can't talk black politics because of the funding again. You know, so we have very few places where we can go and just be black. And that's another reason why I'm so motivated to get this campus renovated, man. So we have a space, at least one space in the country, and I know there's a few others, where we can actually go and talk our agenda and not be concerned about who we offend and who don't like it.
Right.
And what white folks, you got to let the white folks be in the meetings because,
No.
you know, if the funders find out you didn't have white people there, they cut you off. When are we going to get sick and tired of dancing to somebody else's tune? I am so sick. When our even elders, you run into elders, I'm like, elder, you 60, you 70, you 80, you still on this white man's merry-go-round? You still on his roller coaster? You have not yet made up your mind to get off it and do something for yourself? I'm at the point in my life, and I'm only in my 40s, but I'm at the point in my life, if it ain't independent, I don't want nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want nothing to do with it. It's just an absolute waste of my time. And, Baba, I get people who come through the school every day, and they're asking me, Dr. Umar, I can get you some grants. I can get you some of that COVID money. I can't believe you didn't apply for none of that COVID money. That COVID money might have renovated the whole campus. It might have renovated the whole campus. But at what cost?
Yeah.
At what cost?
What do you have to do? What do you have to do to get
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Whatever happened to the black man and woman's thirst for independence? Whatever yeah. happened to the black man and woman's thirst for nationalism? Whatever happened to the black man and woman's thirst for self-reliance and self-determination?
Nation, yes.
Why are we so willing to sell our soul like 30, 50 million Judases for the white man's dirty bag of silver, Baba?
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to open up the phone lines. Brothers and sisters, as many of you in the queue, you hit star twice. If you hit star twice, open up, and then just, or if you're listening, please give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We have a caller. 919. Go ahead. 919-768. 919-768. Go ahead. Okay. Mama Nabantu. Yes, you have a question, Mama.
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on
Can you hear me? I'm on route. I'm driving.
Okay, I can hear you. Go ahead. You're on the line with Dr. Umar Johnson.
Right. Greetings, Brother Umar and Brother I've run an independent African school for over 35 years out in California. I'm now here in Atlanta, Georgia. And one of the reasons is that, you know, funding was so difficult for the independent African schools that we took our school and mistakenly turned it into a charter school. And as you said, Brother Umar, all of a sudden, all the little charter schools that popped up around us with all black children, staff was mixed, very few black, and the money all came from white folks. So we struggled because we did get some Walter money, but it tore into people thinking that, okay, well, we're going to raise your rent because you got this kind of money, and I want a corporate salary and blah, 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 blah. But the bottom line is that it failed. And so I'm with you when I know that we have to start with infancy. Before the baby is born, the mindset of the mother has to be in a reparation mindset or also an entrepreneurial mindset. And also the culture has to be in place. And then from the time the children get into our independent schools, they need to be taught about liberation from the very, very beginning. We used to do that back in the day, back in the 60s and the 70s, and then we lost it because I consult with independent schools. They don't even sing those songs no more. But we don't start with these babies right now to get that mindset right, we will become extinct. You know, and I don't know what kind of curriculum we're going to be using, because we have developed our own curriculum from various different black sources. So I'm interested in knowing how you're developing your curriculum, because that's essential in terms of educating our black kids. So, Twan, thank you for coming on and telling us what's happening with the school, because to me, that's the only thing that's going to change the mindset of our people. And it may take us a while, but we got to start with these babies and move them all the way up. So that's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, Mama Mabantu.
And to the Queen's point, you know, we have to do our own curriculums. So we're building just like you did. We're building our own curriculum from scratch. We're not taking anything that's prepackaged, pre-boxed, and we're not bringing nothing over from the European. You see, it got to be done by us. And now with the way the public school is indoctrinating black children now, with this gender identity thing, telling them they have a right to choose whether they want to be a boy or a girl, and we still got our kids in them schools? I mean, they going through stuff we never went through in public school. On top of the self-hate and the European worship, they now got to deal with the gender side, the homosexuality, and now you got laws being passed in many states to prevent the teaching of American slavery. The children won't even learn that their ancestors, many of them, got here through the slave ship. And then they're also making it illegal to talk about racism in the public schools. So you could teach them to be gay, okay, but you can't teach them who they are. You can't teach them what America did to them, okay, and you can't even teach about racism. There's laws being passed right now that makes it illegal to teach about American slavery or American racism, but yet you could teach about LGBT, and we still won't take our kids out from schools.
404-404-697. Good afternoon.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead. You're on. You're on with Dr. Umar Johnson. Hey.
Hi. Baba Oshi, this is Sister Haiba. I am enjoying your show so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Again for enlightening us like your show. And Brother Umar, I really appreciate you. You know, we appreciate your revolutionary work, and I've been, you know, a great, you know, follower of you and appreciate you and your books and the struggle you're doing. So I wanted to say Asante Sana to that. You know, I'm just listening to the last few minutes when we're talking about how pervasive the school is. And so, you know, we're in dire straits, and so it is so essential. The building of the schools, because like you're saying, they are just, you know, the plot to destroy our children and genocide is very evident. So I wanted to mention that. And also, you know, for the festival, I had a question about if there's any possibility of having it virtual. To do that, and you know, people, you know, we'd like to send our donations in, of course, but you know, with the COVID, this is still some with difficulty to get around. Do you know if there's any possibility to have it on virtual?
Right now, that's not in consideration. I will talk it over with the festival committee. I think we're going to lead towards it not being virtual because we're very much old-fashioned Queen Mother, and we really want y'all to come to the campus. We want y'all to see it. We want to build. You know, we will be doing some things virtually, but I'm very old school. I am probably the closest thing to a Booker T. Washington type of an educator. I'm very old-fashioned. I don't really do all the high-tech stuff unless it's necessary. And for this being our first festival, I think we're going to limit it to the ones who come out. I think we really want people to come and experience. Next year, we may go ahead and throw it up on the internet. But this year, we want this to be a family affair. We want y'all to come and enjoy and partake. We're only 20 minutes from the Philadelphia airport. Where, you know, Wilmington, Delaware is Philadelphia's backyard. Very easy to get to. The exit to 95 North and 95 South is literally 5 minutes from the campus. It's the most convenient place to reach on the Eastern Seaboard. So I'm hoping some of y'all can make it. I know the elders, you know, y'all have a little bit more going on than the rest of us. But I'm really hoping y'all can come and just enjoy yourself. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a band. We're going to have music, Universal African Dance and Drum Ensemble, a fashion show. I'm going to be getting married in the fashion show. There's going to be a wedding scene. We're just going to make it really, really nice. Wow. Plus, you want to come and get your free paraphernalia bag, too. You want to come and get your T-shirt and everything else that we have in that bag. A lot of goodies that we paying some nice money for.
Yeah, that sounds beautiful. It's just because of COVID, you know, and so a lot of us are sheltered in place with this.
I got you.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. I didn't think of that. That's right. Yeah. With the elders,
that's why I
be careful with the COVID. I'm going to talk to the team. I'm going to talk to the team. And see what they say. It's not out the question. I don't think we're leaning in that direction, but it's not out the question. What we may do instead, though, Queen Mother, is load it up after the festival. So for those who missed it, y'all can watch it after.
That's good. Thank you. I was going to mention that.
Oh, yeah, that would be nice. Too.
Yeah, that's going to be good. You got to do that. Because that's a great promotional piece.
Yeah, we're going to definitely send out donations. But, you know,
it's a great promotional piece.
Queen Mother, thank you. And for the donations, everybody, cash.me/FDMGschool. I repeat. cash.me/FDMGschool. Your Cash App, $FDMGschool. PayPal is FDMG Academy. So it's paypal.me/FDMGacademy. FDMG School on the Cash App, FDMG Academy on the PayPal. Please donate. We need all the money we can get because these renovations are not cheap. The HVAC unit is $50,000 by itself.
And the last question.
Go ahead, sister.
Last question I wanted to ask you was in reference to we were speaking about reparations. And so, if I understand you correctly, I heard you to say that we should wait before we request the reparations.
No, we don't have to wait before we request it, but we do not need to disperse them after we receive it. You understand? In other words, they are put in a trust for future generations. So once we get our minds right, then one of the future generations can actually deal with the disbursement of the reparations. But I do not want the current generation of African Americans to be responsible for that reparations, which is payment for all of us, ancestors from the past and generations from the future. This generation of African Americans, in my opinion, should not be the generation to handle such an important responsibility. We will fumble it.
Waste it.
Okay, so I disagree about this. So you said fight for the reparations.
No more always. Yes.
And then when we get it, just
hold
you
put it in trust.
Put it in trust. Hold
it. Put it in trust.
As we get our minds together, as we come together as a people. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think we should be making a decision. You know, I was thinking about doing it simultaneously, too. I mean, I believe we need to be working on what we're going to do with the money the best way, but... Okay. I don't know. I feel like it's a dead old in that, I don't know. It's kind of difficult.
It cannot be a debt squandered, Queen Mother.
Yeah, we can't.
It cannot be a debt squandered.
And believe me, that's why I made that reference about Charles Cutheimer when he said in his column, we should give them reparations because after they
got it, they're going to quickly spend it, and now
they're going to give it right back.
We're going to give it right back to be like a stimulus package.
Give it right back.
Exactly. We'll give it right back to them.
Black folks didn't think about no institutions. We didn't think about no infrastructure.
And
we want a check so we can go and get some new clothes and a Benz and a house in the suburbs for the white folks. We're not thinking about our future.
So then now they can do all the discrimination that they want. They can do any and everything they want because they say, we done paid you off. You can't.
But they
ain't gonna be no more affirmative action. They ain't gonna no more consent decrees.
They
ain't gonna be no more class actions. If you have been discriminated against, the onus is on you to prove it. If you can't corroborate it, it didn't happen. That's on you. Let me get to another caller, sister. Right. Thank you. Thanks, dear. Mama Nabantu, you have something else?
Yes, I did. I wanted to know if Brother Umar is opposed to looking at all the curriculum that's been put together by the African Center School over the last 50 years, rather than start from scratch.
Well, a lot has already been done, but I would like to see. I'm open to anything. So, for example, I've already put out a call to any black authors or curriculum developers, if they want to send a copy of their book or a copy of their curriculum to me, we will review it. Because if it's something that we think is better than what we have, we'll switch it out. And we have no problem contacting the person who gave it to us so we can properly compensate them if we choose to use their curriculum in the school. So whatever materials you have, Queen Mother, put together a nice big box for me, and I'll send you the money for the shipping. And I'll go through it all, and I'll say, you know what? I like this, and I like this, you know. And if there's some sort of monetary compensation that needs to take place, then we can discuss that. So I'm very open to it. I'm very open to it. Just send me what you have.
It's not just me. We have over 100-plus educators who've been through this system who have tons of stuff. But in terms of just actually sending out what needs to happen, we need to be scanned. So it's never lost. At one time, we talked about setting up a warehouse online and offline just for all this creative curriculum that has to develop so that we can benefit from it. I mean, we're talking about songs, science, literature, math. You know, I know we got some authors that's coming up that's doing some great things, but we have a lot of stuff.
I'm very much a believer that the old is better than the new. But I'm with you, Queen Mother. I just need to get my hands on it. So my question is, how do I do that? Take my number down. You got my cell number?
I'll get it from Brother Oshu.
Okay, send me a text. But I need to see it. The next step for me is to look at what's there. I don't care how much it is. I'll go through all of it. It's not a problem for me. But right now, time is at an issue because I'm building my school. So I would like to see what's there. You know, if that means, let's say it's all warehoused in a certain city, I'll come to that city and look at it. You know, so even if it cannot be shipped to Wilmington, Delaware, so be it. I will take myself to where it is. You know what I mean? So that's not a problem for me, but I would like to go through it. Of course, it would be better if I had a copy of it, you know, because most of my time will be here between Philadelphia and Delaware. But I don't have a problem making a trip to go see what's there. So you just got to tell me where it's at. You know, and I'll come take a look at it. The boxes, the crates, whatever it is.
You'll be close because we're here in Atlanta. Mama Nabantu's in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm in Macon
on Sunday, and you'll be in Macon.
I don't know if you plan on coming to the Garvey celebration at the Homeland Village Center in Macon, but that's where I'll be on Sunday. The program begins, I think, at noon. I won't get there until 4 because I'll be flying in from Louisville that morning, and I'll be driving straight to Macon from ATL Airport. So if you're coming there, that's great. I can try to connect with you before I fly out Monday morning, the very next morning. That's a possibility for me to connect with you in Atlanta before my flight on Monday, or whether you come down Sunday. Either way, we can make that happen. And if I got to make a special visit back, that's not a problem, because Philly to Atlanta is a direct flight. And it's only an hour and some change. So you just tell me how you want to move. But I would definitely like to be there because I don't need to reinvent the wheel. So you got to send me a text message because my voicemail stays full helping parents all day long. So send me a text, Doc, I'm the Queen Mother, about the curriculum resources. Give me a call so we can set this up.
Okay, I'll give you a call.
Okay, Mama.
And I'll get your email.
All right. All right. We're almost at the top of the hour. We're going to go a little bit over with Dr. Umar Johnson. For those, we have many people here on the queue. Remember, if you want to ask a question, you have a comment or concern, hit star twice. Otherwise, you can dial 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You know, Dr. Umar Johnson, we only have a few minutes. I'm going to go a little bit over, you know, and I tell you, you know, when I first met you, you know, I saw you in the Hidden Colors series, and you were bringing such knowledge and such fire. And then I had a chance to meet you, and of course, then bringing you to Milwaukee a few times and supporting you, you know. And I know you've had some serious ups and downs, you know, and I'm hoping and praying that you stay on the up, and that what you're saying and what you're doing bring. It comes to fruition, that it really manifests, and that, because I believe that if it does, you'll be supported tremendously, you know, because there's a lot of bullshit out there, but you'll be supported tremendously, because I think those of us who think the way that we do understand that this is necessary for us. We got a caller, 716. Good afternoon.
Brother Oshi, Brother Umar, Firefighter Michael A. Brown from Buffalo, New York.
What's up, my brother?
Listen, man, you're going to need a whole other hour just for questions and answers. What are you talking about? You don't got top of the hour. This is top of the day, man. This is like the topics that have been covered, the entirety of the presentation is such that what's being lost or missing in some respects is the organization of the information. Mm-hmm. How it's presented, who it's presented to, and by.
Yeah. Well, you got a question?
And unfortunately for us, you know, we are without that organization. Yeah. I wanted to ask Brother Umar the question about his doctorate. How many of your classmates are active participants and supporters of what you're trying to do with respect to your education? Psychology was your primary focus.
I went to a predominantly white medical college for my doctorate in clinical psychology, Papa, so I only had one black classmate. I'm not sure where she is in space and time. So all three of my universities were European. My educational leadership master's degree, that was at Lehigh University. Most of my classmates there were black. It was a special cohort from the Philadelphia School District. Most of them are working in the Philadelphia School District as principals and assistant principals. Many of my colleagues are either school psychologists, principals, or assistant superintendents. So I have a lot of administrators. That's my circle because that's what I grew up around professionally. A lot of my elders are educators and retired administrators and things like that. So that's the answer to that question. I wasn't sure the purpose of it, but that's the answer to it.
No. The purpose was that, you know, those kinds of connections that occur at that level, at that intellectual pursuit, is usually your base resource for support, you know.
I would agree.
Critique, assistance, you know. And so yeah. that was my question.
And some of them I can use. But I would say this. They're very competent educationally, but I would say that a lot of them do not have the revolutionary spirit or the liberation focus that I will have in my undertaking. That's probably where the biggest difference is. So
I think,
you know,
that's probably very true. And I think that one of the great dilemmas that your approach seeks to adjust is that disconnect between the pursuit and the goal.
Yes.
Is that disconnect. And I think that's really what we have a problem being able to convey to younger people as an educational pursuit, is that this is a freedom march. The school building and the books in the library and what's on TV are all of your implements of this journey. Be it feeding your mind, be it altering your mind, being expanding your mind. That those are the procedures or the processes that are required. And you as a psychologist, psychiatrist,
psychology.
Educated in that form with that mindset, to pursue freedom, to pursue justice, to pursue liberation. That was John Henry Clark's main thesis. If it ain't providing you no means for liberation, then throw it in the trash. That includes what he book you done bought, anyone that then wrote it. If he ain't writing it for your liberation, throw it in the trash. Spend your time reading something that's going to get you liberated. And if that's not the goal for those youngsters showing up in that school, then you can have some yak teacher stand up there and say anything out their face, and it ain't going to be challenged. Because them kids are right, going, yo, you wrong as two left shoes. Let me tell you what that's about. Because I can quote the actual authorship of your proposal, of your position. And it's totally opposite from what you've written. That's what I enjoy about this critical race theory.
Appreciate you.
That's what I want. And that critical race theory, that's nothing but some jumbled up words and abstract reality. This, what we're talking about is not it's a critique of what has been offered up as a history. And it is not accurate.
And
you can call it editorializing if you want.
Absolutely.
You can call it whatever.
Where's the critical nation-building theory?
Yeah. Where's your nation-building theory? If you focus on that, you get to the critical race theory on the way.
That's
you
right.
You get to that.
That's right.
That's the why of it, the critical race theory.
That's right.
We just want to strip away all of your supposed theoretical supports for this claim that you have a theory. I don't believe you got one. I think your only theory is how do I take it, how long can I keep it, and how long does it keep it from you?
How do I make the money off of it?
the money was money when it was salt. It was money when it was books. It was money when it was tulips. They don't have no, money comes in all kind of forms with them. And the only thing that keeps them alive is the fact that there's value that somebody else got, and we can take it and we're going to keep it.
That's right.
That's what money is. And my dad told me, you got
theory. Put your name on
it. If you can count
it,
you ain't got no money.
Talking about it.
I think that what I would prefer, you know, you made the comment about reparations not for this generation, and I agree. I don't think it is for this affluent, affected generation. But I tell you what, if you was to govern your affluence so that it was self-directed, your affluence, you ain't got to go out there and throw your money behind some Nikes unless you just got to. I don't know why you would if you ain't running up and down a basketball court, and they giving you them if you're doing that. So quiet as it's kept. You can cut yourself off from Pepsi or Spectrum Cable or General Motors or whatever you want and put that savings behind your reparations effort. But you won't. Why? Because you don't have an organized or a managed economy. Your economy is being managed by somebody else.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
And they're managing it bit right out of your pocket and into theirs. I think I agree 100% with Krautheimer's claim. Because it's obvious as we speak right now. Where did the stimulus go? There wasn't no proposal from Urban League for stimulus money.
And when Krautheimer said that was back in the late 70s or possibly. Yeah, that was late 70s. That was late 70s. Let me get another caller, Brother Mike.
He was probably mimicking William F. Buckley.
Yeah.
That's been the same riff since Benjamin Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
So listen, send them back to Africa right now while we got this opportunity for a great white nation. And they were so greedy, they said, no, we'll sacrifice that for right now because we're going to keep it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, let me bring all them black folks in.
Let me get another caller, Brother Mike. Just hold on, okay? All right.
Okay, brother.
Baba, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I don't have any comments.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Brother Umar?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because we are over, but I just want to give people a chance to make their comment, questions.
Do you hear me, Papa?
I can hear you. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with everything the elder said. We got one of the things that Dr. Jeffries always talk about is the paralysis of analysis. And that is something that we suffer from a lot as a people, especially now because we live in the dot-com era and the social network era where we see new fads pop up every day, new slogans, new hashtags, and we just run with it. We have to learn how to pause, step back, and do a thorough analysis. Why is this coming to me right now? You see, and what will this ultimately do for me? And who ultimately benefits from this? You know, we don't look at stuff deeply enough, I think. And I think we always end up being exploited, and we always end up getting off track. You know, we fighting for liberation. We ain't fighting for no new theories for white people to get adopted. You know, we're not fighting for the immigrants and all this other stuff, feminism and LGBTism and multi. Nah, we're fighting for Pan-Africanism, the total, complete liberation and political and economic emancipation of African people. Anything that comes to our table, if it ain't dealing with that on some level, in some way, in some aspect, we need to remove it from the table. We don't have time to waste getting involved in all these pseudo struggles and all these pseudo issues. We got to keep our eyes on the prize.
I say. Well, Doc, like I said, we're up against that clock. I appreciate all those who have called and all those who are listening. What I want to do is get back with you within next month in September after the festival, and kind of like take just look at where you are now, because believe me, I know when you came to Milwaukee, you talked about the school. That was back in 2013, 2012. You know, it's almost 10 years ago, you know, and I know it's been a struggle, but yet, you know, as you know, Frederick Douglass, you know what he said about struggle, right? Yeah, I know
there
you know.
There is no struggle.
Exactly.
There is no progress.
There's no progress. So we understand the importance of struggle. We also understand the importance of progress in terms of, you know, where it's at as it's coming along. As it comes along, we see things are happening, positive things are happening. And I'm hoping that this festival that you're going to have, people will see that. And, you know, because one brother asked me, he said, well, why don't he, you know, I mean, we got all these people that got serious money. They got millions of dollars. And so their minds aren't right. They're not in that. But not only that, you know, we wanted to do something in and of ourselves, you know,
That's right.
Feel the pride that we came together, pulled our resources, and we made this happen. You know, and it's something right. that we can feel very proud of. We're not beholden to anybody, you know.
That's right.
We don't have to, you know, get on here and thank you. So, no, we did this, and that's what needs to happen. So any closing remarks, Brother Umar?
I just want to, again, thank you, Baba, for allowing me to get on the airwaves. Also to the brothers and sisters who have supported us these 7 years. Since we took our first donation in April of 2014 in St. Louis, Missouri. From that time all the way until now, it's been a struggle, but we made some progress. But I'm just hoping that everybody comes out on Saturday, September the 11th. Come on out and join us for our first ever FDMG Family Festival. Food, games, book bags, fashion show, vendors, performances, dancing, music. It's going to be fun, and I'm just looking forward to seeing all our supporters, all our donors. This is not for haters. This is not for people on the fence. These are for people who are already committedly an FDMG supporter and already committedly a Dr. Umar supporter. No Negroes will be allowed. You will be thrown out by the neck. please go and register FDMGFestival.com if you want to be a vendor, FDMGVending@gmail.com, FDMGPerformances@gmail.com, or you can text my phone at 215-989-9858. Don't forget, Denver Friday night at 5 o'clock, Louisville Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, Macon, Georgia Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock, Harlem, New York Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, and of course we have the doubleheader in Wisconsin, Kenosha, Jacob Blake Riley, Saturday, August 21st, my born day, the anniversary of the Haitian Revolution, the Nat Turner Revolution, and George Jackson's revolution against mass incarceration when they took his life on August the 21st, 1971. We will be in Kenosha Civic Center Park 12 to 4, and then we will be in Milwaukee that night 7 until 10 at the community center. If you need the information, please text Dr. Umar 215-989-9858.
I say, oh, before you go, yes. Renoka Rashidi was a friend of mine, just like I feel I'm a friend of yours. I mean, I know you.
Yes,
and you
sir.
Know me.
And he was a friend of mine.
Yeah.
In fact, Baba Renoka was the first one, the first scholar of national or international standing to share the stage with me. It was Tony Martin, the Marcus Garvey historian, who's now an ancestor author of Race
yes.
First.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite books.
Yes.
It was him,
Tony Martin,
Dr. Renoka, and myself. The three of us spoke at the UNIAACL Regional Conference at North Carolina Central University.
I see.
After I got off that stage, Renoka came over to me when we went to eat, and Renoka looked at me and he said, he's the first scholar, him and Tony Martin, that I shared the stage with. Renoka looked at me. This was 2004. I was okay. Minister of Education. Renoka looked at me and he said, don't forget me when you become famous. And that was his way of saying that he saw something in me that he thought will one day soon take fire. And it took fire. And Renoka called it before the war, before the world ever knew who Dr. Umar was. He's the first one to call it.
Right on. I say. So I'm going to be paying tribute to Renoka next week on my broadcast. His birthday is Monday the 16th. He was he died
day before God.
Yeah, right. So he, you know, he's also part of Black August. He's also part of Black August Day.
Yes, sir. Is there a homecoming ceremony for him?
I don't know yet. I've been looking forward, and hopefully, you know, it'll be probably in L.A. You know, and if it is, I feel
please
compelled.
Please let me know, Bob, if you get that as soon as you get it, so I
sure
can try
will.
To make some arrangements to be there.
Okay. If you, well, I'll tell you what, man. If you're there, I'm there. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, dear brother. Brothers and sisters,
all
we
right,
thank
Baba,
you.
Be blessed.
You tip. We end this right, program. Man, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants. Think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Isantesana means thank you. Bibi Vahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed, wonderful day. I hope to see you on Friday. Peace.